Vee woke in the darkness in a cold sweat. Sister Ariel had muttered darkly about some ineptitude or other that kept Vee from getting a new room and roommate immediately. But after the dream Vee had just had, she was glad to be alone. She got out of bed, and the moment her feet touched the warm floor, dim light bloomed in the ceiling. Vee barely noticed. She pulled on the frumpy Tyro's dress and headed out the door. Her stomach felt tight and sore. As she stepped into the hall, light bloomed like a star against the wall. Then, as if an unseen hand were drawing in big, bold lines, the light became a star suspended in a spider's web, which was draped between an elk's antlers. The beast regarded Vee tiredly, but stood to accompany her, the star illuminating her section of the hall with warm light. Vee forgot herself and touched the beast. The light remained, but all else faded. The web around the star was replaced by an old iron lantern. The elk disappeared, and in quick strokes was replaced with a bearded, fatherly woodsman. He nodded to Vee and lifted the lamp high. She touched the figure, and it faded to be replaced with a grinning dog balancing the star on its nose. She began walking, and it walked beside her. It was amazing. This entire floor was made to be a safe place for children. In sudden fury, she punched the wall. The dog faded, and a jester replaced it. Vee hurried to the stairs at the center of the building. When she arrived at Sister Ariel's room, the door swung open before Vee knocked. Vee was speechless. She stepped inside.
Sit.
Her room wasn't large, and most of it was covered in piles of books and scrolls, but there were two chairs.
Pay attention and hold still.
Ariel took V's swollen right hand.
Savalthos!
Pain shot through V's hand, then passed, and her bruises faded.
You have an unfortunate habit of hitting things that are harder than your fist. The next time your recalcitrance evinces itself in self-mutilation, I won't heal you.
I want you to make it stop.
Excuse me?
You tricked me into ringing Kyler. I want this damn thing off.
Had a lucid dream, did you?
Fuck! Stop using words I don't understand!
The tongue is a flame, child. We who speak to use magic learn to control it, else it burns us. Do you know what I was doing while you were studying today?
I don't give a shit!
I have no moral qualm with your cursing, you fecal-mouthed cretin. When a gutter-shite curses, the world can't even hear it, Vee. When a Maja curses, the world trembles. So, I've come up with some punishments. I expect that you will exhaust them before I exhaust your defiance. But we're committed now. Your defiance only makes the path longer. Satroka Excepcio Dazi!
Though she'd briefly seen the aura of magic surround Sister Ariel, Vee felt nothing.
What have you done?
That, my dear, is half the fun. With each new punishment, you get to guess. Now, you came because you had a particularly vivid dream, did you not?
It was him. He came to my bed. It was real.
And?
What do you mean, and?
You dreamed of bedding a man, so what? Are you afraid you'll get pregnant?
We didn't, actually, you know.
Then why are you here?
Is it because of the earrings?
Your dream? Definitely. They allow husbands and wives who can't be together to still communicate, or conjugate. Only a few, even of the oldest rings, could do that, by the way. As I recall, not a few sisters wasted decades studying it to find a way to pass messages instantly over great distances. It never worked. I can't recall why. But after the third Alatar and Accord banning Magi from marrying talented men, no one studied it.
So what I dreamed, Kyla dreamed?
That's what I said, isn't it? So, it frightened you?
Well, not exactly.
Sometimes talking with you is like trying to master the Vengarizian weave.
Ah, fuck this. What the fuck?
My mother used soap, but I couldn't figure out a weave for that. Now, you woke me for a reason. After you tell me what it was, you can go back to bed.
After 30 seconds, V realized Sister Ariel was serious.
Have you ever even had sex?
Actually, I lost my maidenhead riding a horse.
I had no idea you were so coordinated.
No, you did not. I didn't know you had such a wit. I like you more and more, V.
V would sooner die than squander even such a small bit of Ariel's regard. It was also an artful dodge of V's question. Hell, it was no use. V was tired, and her stomach still felt as if she needed to shit.
I've bedded dozens of men.
Good job. The correction, I mean, not the promiscuity.
I never felt anything with any of them. Not since I was a kid. But with Kyler...
I'm no authority, but I think it's supposed to be different with someone you love.
Not I didn't feel anything for them. I didn't feel them. I'm totally numb down there. But tonight...
Her mouth snapped shut. Since she was a child, fucking had been something V observed, something men did to her. Gradually, her powerlessness had become her power. Men were slaves to their meat. V's body was simply currency, with the advantage that she could spend it again and again. When she'd first thought of fucking Kyler, it had only been to think that after what she'd done to him, she owed him. Tonight had been horribly different. Different even from her earlier dream of Kyler. She had wanted Kyler in more ways than she could have imagined. Her body ached for him. It was like something lying so deeply asleep in her that she thought it was dead, was waking. Fucking Kyler wouldn't be a casual gift of the use of her body. It would be surrender.
You have to get this earring off! Please, before I go see Aline. She's still here, isn't she?
I'm sorry, child. Yes, she's here. You'll speak with her tomorrow. Oh. Vridiana, I've read everything I could find on those rings. The bond is unbreakable. It seemed like a good idea when they made them, I suppose. First, they were used to bond the Magus and Maja, who knew what they were getting into. Then others began to use the rings in political marriages. Kings and queens alike began to demand that the ringsmiths exaggerate the compulsion properties toward one side or the other. Like yours are exaggerated to give you control. I don't know if we can understand the depth of human misery those Magi wrought. But, seeing what they had done, the Visana, the Makers, took an oath to make such rings no more. They gathered those they could find and destroyed them, and every text on their making. That ring in your ear is at least 400 years old. That it survived to the present age is nothing less than a miracle.
A miracle? You call this a miracle?
Her carriage was waiting for her, but when Mama Kay got in, she wasn't alone. The dark blob in the opposite seat resolved itself into scarred ravels.
Good evening, Mama Kay. Headed to the coronation.
As a matter of fact, I am. You need a ride?
I don't think so. Seems I've fallen out of favor with the Queen.
It seems?
I wake up from a good long drunk and go to get some air of the dog, and I got 5 guys telling me stories about what I did to the Queen. Somehow, it's the wrong day. I was drunk, but I shouldn't have slept for a day and a half. It's Durzo, isn't it?
Don't be ridiculous. Durzo's dead.
I know. I killed him, remember? He swore he wouldn't haunt me, but now my best client wants me dead.
You still killed him. That had to be upsetting.
You're not playing with me, are you? You didn't send some other wet boy to talk with Queen Grayson?
I didn't send anyone. I didn't arrange for the ambassadors to be insulted. I haven't moved against Terra Grayson. Get out of the city for a while, Ben. Durzo probably just wanted to make sure you didn't take any more jobs for the woman who ordered his death.
Ben Rabel nodded, unthinking. And that unthinking nod confirmed what Mama Kay had suspected. It was indeed Terra Grayson who'd ordered Durzo killed. The bitch. Well, she'd get hers. Soon. The great hall was filled with the cream of the realm, though given the hardships of the last year, that cream was more like watered milk. Many of the lords and ladies of the realm wore garments they wouldn't have had their servants wear a year ago. The number of nobles was also considerably reduced. Some had been killed in the coup or at Pavel's Grove. Others had sided early with the God King and had since fled. The Chamberlain had done his best to fill in the ranks and bedeck the Great Hall appropriately, but the pageantry seemed thin. For once, however, there was no criticism. It was too hard to critique the Royal Guard's threadbare uniforms hastily patched with the colors of House Grayson while wearing a stained dress and borrowed jewels. Kyler stepped in through a servant's entrance. He had no wish to be announced. He just wanted to see the effects of his handiwork. There was, however, one problem with the servant's entrance. It was full of servants.
If I use you to cover these clothes, are you going to eat a hole in the crotch?
Hard to say.
Ah, my lord. Is my lord lost?
The cheerful servant didn't wait for an answer.
My lord may follow me.
He turned and began walking, and Kyler had no choice but to follow. The servant marched him to the main entrance and handed him off to the Chamberlain, a humorless man who looked him up and down, cocking his head like a bird.
You're out of order, Marcus. You were to enter after your lord.
I'm sorry, you've mistaken me. I'm Baronet Stern. You needn't announce...
Duke Geyer informed me pointedly that I was to announce you. Marcus Kyler Drake, Lord of Havermere, Lockley, Venice, and Prosin.
Feeling as if he wasn't in control of his own body, Kyler walked forward. Logan hadn't only legitimized Kyler by giving him a real title, unlike the baronessy of lie-cannot-held lands, he'd promoted him to dizzy heights. A marquess was beneath only the dukes of Cenaria. Kyler's chest tightened. It was a real title with real lands and real responsibilities. Worse, Logan must have worked with Count Drake to have Kyler formally adopted. Kyler's bogus pedigree had been wiped clean. Logan was putting his own integrity behind Kyler. It was his last attempt to save Kyler from himself. Kyler took his place to Logan's left in the front row. Logan smiled, and the bastard was so charismatic, Kyler felt himself smiling along with him, too astonished to be pissed off.
Well, well, my friend. I half expected you to be slinking around up in the rafters. So glad you decided to join us mortals on the ground.
Rafters. Right. So overdone. You're causing quite the scandal.
I won't give up my best friend without a fight.
You honor me?
Yes, I do.
Did Mama Kane put you...
I came up with this all by myself, thank you. Though Count Drake augmented it.
The adoption?
The adoption. 6 rows back, left side.
Kyler looked and the blood drained from his face. In a section of poorer barons, a middle-aged blonde lord and lady in even more modest clothing than most stood under the stern banner. Beside them was a young man as dark as they were light, their son, Baronet Stern.
That might be awkward.
We all need friends, Kyler. Me, most of all. I've lost almost everyone I can trust. I need you.
Kyler said nothing. He noticed Logan's clothing for the first time. The Duke was wearing a somber tunic and trousers, finely cut but unrelievedly black. They were mourning clothes. Logan was still mourning Janine, his whole family, many of his retainers, and perhaps Sarah Drake as well. That old sick feeling rose in Kyler's stomach once more. Logan and Count Drake both were gambling their honor, which to each of them was his most sacred possession. On Kyler. Tara Grayson's assassination now would be more than a tragic difference of opinion. To Logan, it would be betrayal. There was nothing to do. Marquess Kyler Drake sat in the front row with eyes constantly on him. Perhaps the Night Angel could invisibly drop from the rafters and scoop up the deadly crown, but Marquess Drake could only watch the consequences of his choices unfurl.
It is my proud honor to present to you Her Highness Queen Tara Grayson.
Kyler stood as Tara Grayson strode regally to the front, as the potter and the priest lifted prayers and blessed her coronation. Finally, the two divines and Duke Wesseros together lifted the crown from its purple pillow.
Not yet. Dear God, not yet.
Kyler hadn't even thought of what would happen to those crowning Terra if she was already sweating. Symbolizing all the gods and the land itself, the three men placed the crown on Queen Grayson's brow. Nothing happened. She accepted a scepter from Duke Westeros and a sword from Lord General Grayson, held each for a long moment, then handed each back. The men bowed low, then retreated, and Kyler's heart edged back out of his throat. The queen smiled. She stood and gestured generously with her hands. Doors banged open on every side, and a procession of servants streamed in bearing tables and food. Musicians and jugglers mingled with the crowds as the servants rearranged the room for a feast. Kyler barely saw him. His eyes were latched on Terra Grayson.
Well, that's that, huh? Come, Marquess Drake. Tonight you sit at the high table.
Kyler allowed Logan to usher him to a seat between a nattering 40-year-old third cousin of the Gunders, who was hoping to press a claim to the Gunder duchy, and Mama Kay, who was seated at Logan's right. She smiled at Kyler's open wonder.
Don't tell me he got you a title, too.
You forget, Kyler. I've been to more court functions than you have. Although I admit, not many in the last decade. To the abiding fury of every eligible woman in the room, Duke Gaia chose to escort me this evening.
Really?
Belatedly, Kyler remembered that Guinevere Carena had been the courtesan of an age, though she'd retired by the time Kyler knew her. She had doubtless escorted many of the lords in this very room to similar functions. He knew there had been a convenient fiction early in her career that Guinevere was a visiting Alataran countess, but after a time, even that had been unnecessary. A woman as beautiful, as charming, as graceful a dancer, as skilled a singer, as adept a conversationalist, and as discreet as Guinevere Carena was the exception to many rules. Mama Kay raised an eyebrow.
Sorry, I didn't mean...
Logan came to his rescue.
I asked her before anyone else could. I find there are so few beautiful women in this realm intelligent enough to form complete sentences.
The truth was more likely that wearing morning clothes and showing up with an older woman were the best ways Logan could fend off unwanted advances. If Logan had shown up with a young woman as his escort, or none at all, the matchmakers would have started in on him. Morning clothes or no morning clothes. Kyler was still chuckling when he saw Terra Grayson a few paces beyond Logan.
Oh!
Kyler, is something wrong?
I keep waiting for her head to explode.
Kyler couldn't take his eyes off the queen. She drank. She leaned close to Lantana Garawashi on her right and shared private observations. She jested with the lord at one of the lower tables who'd spilled his wine over his wife. She chatted with her brother who sat at her left. All the while, her death was waiting.
What I don't understand is why, out of all people, you're pushing Jarl's proposal.
The name made Kyler pay attention.
If I said it was because Jarl gave me hope, would you believe me?
A troubled look crossed Logan's face, and Kyler saw the old naive Logan briefly at battle with the Logan who'd spent months in the hole.
I'd believe that was part of it.
The fact is, Jarl's plans are not just good for the rabbits. They're good for everyone. Do you know how much the average rabbit spends when he visits a whorehouse? I was being rhetorical, Your Grace. 3 silver pieces. 1 on drink, 2 for the girl. I make 1 in silver profit. The average merchant buys wine, a meal, sometimes tobacco, sometimes riot weed, then a girl. I keep more than a crown in profit. And when nobles visit, desserts, dancers, bards, jugglers, aperitifs, fine wines, plus other services you'd probably prefer I do not mention. I take 7 crowns in profit. So, if you were a cutthroat merchant queen, which would you choose?
Point taken.
Kyler could barely believe his eyes. Logan talking calmly about the economics of prostitution.
The problem with how the people have looked at the rabbit is that they see them as grubby, uncultured, and dangerous. I see them as potential customers.
But you're not hurting for money. You own, what, half of the, houses of pleasure in the city?
Mama Kay gave a feline smirk, and Kyler realized that she didn't own half the city's brothels. She owned them all.
And I've heard you don't pay taxes, ever. Even if we were able to figure out exactly which magistrates in this city take bribes and which don't.
As Logan said it, Kyla realized Logan was speaking with the one woman in the city who could tell him.
If we removed them, you would suddenly have a raft of expenses you never had before. I can't imagine you'd come out ahead. If you were the city's most astute merchant, would you choose taxes or no taxes?
In the past 20 years, I've had nobles seize entire brothels no less than 15 times. Banks I had an interest in have been seized 10 times. I've lost 60 bounces to nobles who resented being thrown out. In a particularly bad year, a certain high noble took a taste to killing whores. I lost 43 girls. When someone finally killed him, his father retaliated by burning 6 of my brothels to the ground, one of them with all of my employees locked inside. So, while we can debate how many months without taxes pays for a seized brothel, ledger sheets can't explain what it is to find your young protege has been kidnapped. They can't tell you what it is to live wondering how long it will be before the twist tires of her, and whether he will then kill her or release her. Your Grace, I have learned to use this city's corruption, but I shall not weep to see it destroyed.
I had no idea such things took place.
Beyond Logan, Queen Grayson put a hand on her crown and adjusted it on her forehead. A bolt of lightning arced through Kyler, but nothing happened. He willed his muscles to relax and stabbed the untouched fillet on his plate.
The question is it possible? I mean, building a few bridges over the Plith isn't going to change things. We'd be fighting against established interests.
We ended slavery, and we did it without a war. The time is ripe. People have seen so much tumult in the last year that one more upheaval, if it gives them hope, could change everything. The Nocta Hermata showed the city that the rabbits can be brave. Pavel's Grove showed that they're willing to bleed for this country. Things can be made new.
Yes, as soon as the Queen's head explodes.
Logan and Mama Kay continued their discussion, but Kyler stopped listening and merely watched. Logan asked piercing questions about the city's trades and economics. Who moved what, where merchants bought which goods, what the tariffs were with different countries, how merchants avoided the more egregious taxes. That moved into history and seamlessly into what they thought of the current state of the country, from who had been hurt worst by the wars to who had cooperated with Kalidor and how much of that would be held against them, to which lands no longer had lords and who was pressing claims to them. As Kylo watched, he realized that this must be what it was like for a neophyte soldier to watch him fighting. Logan and Mama wove names and histories and connections among nobles licit and illicit, and business dealings and rumors through their speech like masters of the loom. Though Logan was clearly less experienced and had access to only the licit half of the city's information, he still surprised Mama Kay from time to time with his analyses. And even as they were obviously engrossed in their own conversation, Logan took time to exchange pleasantries with Lantano Garawashi at his left, who seemed intent on the Queen anyway, and to make eye contact with the nobles at the lower tables who sought his glance, and thank the servers and even applaud the beaming new court bard, who was terrifically talented, even if he did look like a frog. Beyond Logan, Tara Grayson was focused on her triumph and enjoying it. Accepting congratulations, drinking, damn it, poison would have worked, and flirting openly with both Lantano Garawashi and her brother. There, Kyla saw a microcosm of two regions. Logan, intent on bettering a country, Tara, intent on herself. And as the evening progressed, he realized that someone had cleaned the crown before the Queen donned it. It put a decision Kyler had thought he'd already made back in his lap. It was good to be with his friends. Here at the high table, Kyler was suddenly legitimate and no longer alone. He could stay here with the people he admired and loved. Mama Kay and Count Drake and Logan could be his companions for the rest of his life. He could find Aline and bring her back and give her this life, a life beyond the shadows. Maybe he didn't have to be the wolf in the cold. Gods, he was immortal. Would it be so bad to let himself have one lifetime of happiness? Drake and Mama Kay had ended slavery while a corrupt king reigned. Surely Logan and Count Drake and Kyler and Mama Kay, they could mitigate whatever damage a foolish queen did. From the middle of the table, Queen Grayson caught Kyler staring at her. She winked. As the feast ended, Queen Grayson stood and headed for one of the adjoining rooms, arm in arm with Lantano Garawashi. Lantano Garawashi was graceful and intimidating in his broad, loose pants that draped like a skirt, and a silk shirt with starched tabs over his wide shoulders, leaving his heavily muscled arms bare. The rest of the high table stood next, and Kyla moved to follow her. Logan put a hand on his arm and pulled a fat ring engraved with horses off a finger.
This is a symbol of your new office, Marquess.
From a pocket, he produced another, much smaller signet ring shaped with what looked like a tiny dragon. Kyla recognized it.
This is the ring of House Drake. Take them. There's life beyond the shadows.
Kyler had given his life before. He'd died to save the woman he loved. He'd died to get money to get out of Cenaria. He'd died for refusing Tara Grayson's contract on Logan. He'd died opposing the God King. It had never been fun, but he'd begun to trust that he would come back. Every other death had cost him only the pain of dying. This death would cost him his life. He would have to leave forever. Start over completely in a far land. It would be like every one of his friends had died at the same time.
You'll make a great king.
How many men are you willing to kill for that idea?
It's not an idea. It's a dream. Now, if you'll excuse me, Your Grace, the longer people see you talking with me, the more I will sully your reputation.
Kyla turned and followed Tara Grayson into the next room.
Your Grace, I think we should stay. I hear the new bard has composed a wonderful new song.
Quogley Mars hadn't eaten. He would eat later, if at all, with the servants. But tonight, it didn't bother him. He wandered the tables and played whatever asinine music the threadbare nobles requested. He accepted their applause and moved on, eager to please the next batch of up-jumped plebeians. After dinner, the castle was opened up and the tables spirited away so the nobles could mingle and have a chance to pay their respects and exchange a few words with the new queen. Entertainments had been spread through the numerous rooms with desserts and liquors. Quogley waited until the party had been going for a while before he mounted the platform where the high table had been. The guards who wandered the party had all wandered out, and several of the kingdom's more important nobles were in the room, and, most important, Queen Grayson wasn't. Leaning his head down as if oblivious to them all, he began playing. Then, before the resolution, he stopped abruptly. The Cretans were all looking at him, silent, expectant, not knowing if they could clap yet. He dipped his head, not even this perturbing him. Yeah! Quogley held up a hand quickly, silencing it. The room held perhaps 200 nobles, at least 100 hangers-on, and dozens of servants. Miraculously, there were still no guards. And what speaking Quogley had to do, he had to do without interference.
Today, I wish to play something new that I've written for you, and all I ask is that you allow me to finish. This song was commissioned by someone you know, but someone who is more special than you know. It was, in fact, commissioned by the Shinga of your Sakage. I swear every word of this song is true. I call it the Song of Secrets, and your Shinga wishes me to dedicate it to Queen Grayson.
That's plenty far, Sergeant Gamp.
Scarred Ravel stepped out of the shadows in a doorway that connected one of the side rooms with the great hall. With a practiced hand, he slid an arm between the sergeant's rich cloak and his back and cut through leather to bring the point of a dagger to rest against the man's spine.
There's nothing in there that interests you.
What are you bastards doing in the great hall?
No theft, nor murder. That's all you need to know, Sergeant.
It's Commander Gamble now.
It'll be the late Commander Gamble if you move that hand another inch.
Point taken.
In case you think of raising an alarm,
You might want to take a careful look around the room and tell me what you see.
Commander Gamble looked. 8 royal guards were in the room. 6 of them were conversing individually with young male noblemen that the commander didn't recognize. The 2 others were stationed on either side of Queen Grayson and not talking to anyone, as they were commanded not to while guarding the queen. However, another group of 3 nobles near them did seem especially vigilant now that Commander Gamble studied them.
Shit!
Gamble had no idea the Sakage even had so many wet boys.
Let me guess. If anyone raises the alarm, you have orders.
If you cooperate, not only will you and all these men live, but no one will blame you afterward. You might even keep your job.
Why should I believe you?
Because I don't need to lie. I got 2 dozen friends and a knife in your back.
2 dozen? Commander Gamble chewed on that for a moment.
Well then, why don't we have a drink? I've got a special bottle down in the kitchens.
Food paused, poised inches from open mouths, forgotten. Servants froze in the act of collecting glasses. For a moment, no one even breathed. In a city of fatal secrets, Quogley Mars had told everyone that he knew the greatest secret of them all. If that was the prequel to his song, what would his song hold? Quogley presided over the silence like the maestro he was, a smug smirk tugging at his lips. He judged the silence as if it were music, each beat of rest landing in perfect order. And a moment before the revelation could spark a firestorm of comment, he lifted one finger. The voice decried loneliness. All eyes turned to a barrel-chested woman in ivory that no one recognized. As she sang, she strode through the crowd until she joined Quogley on his platform. The words clashed. Lovers singing of love and love denied. A sister's passion, a brother's confusion. Youth in turmoil, society frowning condemnation. Secrets born in the bedchambers of an exalted house. A woman defiant, passionate, letting nothing stand in her way. Though he didn't name them, Quogley had taken no pains to conceal the objects of his song. But as always, some nobles caught on earlier than others. Those who understood couldn't believe what they were hearing. They searched the room for guards, sure that someone must stop this beautiful outrage. But no guard was at his post. The Sakage had chosen this night to unveil its power. There was no way this could be an accident. Quogley sang treason, and no one stopped him. The beauty of the music and the seduction of a rumor held the nobles in a spell. It was Quogley's masterpiece. The music claimed this twisted love was love indeed, even as the boy twisted against his conscience and the woman demanded her rights as a beloved. The brother never knew. The elder sister was all she had, all she desired, threatened by her own sister, and in her conflicted heart, she hatched a desperate plan. Unnoticed by the rapt nobles, a young man had entered the chamber only moments after the first note sounded. Luke Grayson made no move to silence Quogley Mars. From the back of the room, he only listened. The song told of Natasa Grayson spiraling into the hole, betrayed by her own blood, murdered.
No!
Luke burst through the doors, fleeing. No one followed. Seeing Count Drake, Kyla slipped through Queen Grayson's entourage, but for once, the casual invisibility of ordinariness failed him. A woman's hand touched his elbow. He turned and found himself staring into Tara Grayson's eyes. Those deep, green Grayson eyes were breathtaking, especially as Kyla involuntarily stared deeper. In another place, another time, born to different parents, Tara Grayson's evils would have been meaningless, for she was merely obliviously selfish. She had desires, and others existed to fulfill them. Her betrayals were casual, because she barely gave them a thought. Had she been born a miller's daughter, the damage she did would have been confined to jilted lovers and cheated customers.
I thought Logan and Rimbold had told me everything about you, Kyla Drake, but they could have warned me how handsome you are.
For some reason, the comment flustered Kyla. He'd always considered himself very average-looking, but looking into her eyes, he knew, that she meant what she said, even if she was saying it aloud to flatter him. He blinked and began blushing, and whatever it was that made him see into Terra faltered and disappeared.
And such beautiful eyes. You've got eyes that make a girl think you can see right through her.
I can.
Is that why you're blushing? Tell me, Marquis, what do you see when you look in my eyes?
It would be highly indiscreet for me to say, Your Highness.
Marquis, a man risks his tongue for speaking indiscreetly to a queen.
Tongues should be used to commit indiscretions, not discuss them.
Marquis, you'll have me blushing.
I'd be content with having you.
Marquis Drake, I consider it my duty to know the nobles who serve me. You will attend me in my chambers.
Yes, Your Highness.
Wait 10 minutes. The guards will allow you through the door. I expect your discretion.
Kyla nodded, smirking.
Have we met? There's something about you that seems so familiar.
Actually, we did meet once. I'm sorry I didn't make more of an impression on you.
Well, we'll remedy that.
Indeed.
Terra slipped away and Kyler saw Lantana Garawashi 15 paces away staring at him. Kyler's throat constricted, but though he didn't look pleased, Garawashi made no move toward him. Kyler looked around the room blankly, forgetting why he'd come in here in the first place. A girl broke away from Terra Grayson's circle and whispered to the guards at one of the doors. She turned. His eyes took in the large eyes, perfectly coiffed hair, clear skin, full lips, narrow waist, and lean, firm curves. It was Elena Drake. She was one of the Queen's handmaidens. Kyler had the sense of dislocation. He looked away from a little girl for a moment and found a woman in her place. Elena Drake was stunning. As she pointed him out to the guards to tell them to let him through to see the Queen, her eyes suddenly met his. Her face was a mask of disappointment and disgust. She thought she was being used to help her big brother cheat on her friend, Aline. She thought he'd become a marquess and was so enwrapped by the idea of bedding a queen that he'd left everything else behind. Worse than the anger was the monumental disappointment in her eyes. Until now, Kyla could do no wrong in Alina's eyes. He had been the slam until now. Queen Grayson, having made her excuses, left the room. Kyler turned away. Rimbold Drake disengaged from a conversation and was limping toward Kyler, leaning on his cane. His eyes went from Kyler's face to his hands and the rings that weren't there.
She's beautiful.
She looks like her mother, Yolana, did 20 years ago, albeit with more fire.
Yolana Drake had been as much of a mother to Kyler as he had allowed. She had been a woman unfailingly graceful. She had seemed to grow only more beautiful as the years had passed. Kyla told Drake as much.
It's enough to tempt a man to curse God.
Drake's eyes were stony. Kyla opened his mouth to ask a question, then closed it. In the next room, through the crowd listening to the bard, he saw a gorgeous blonde in a blue silk dress cut so low in back it barely covered her butt. Kyla's breath caught. For a mad moment, he thought it was Aline. Damn guilty conscience. Daedra and her perfect ass moved deeper into the crowd, as if looking for someone.
And you told me you gave up working the sheets.
Kyla, you're my son, or can be if you say the word. I give you permission to be tactless.
I wondered if it's harder for you when this shit happens. Sorry, I mean, I think what happened with Sarah and Mags and Yolana is awful and senseless, but I don't expect the world to make sense. I wondered if it was harder for you, since you think there's a god out there who could have stopped it but didn't.
Kyla, in the crucible of tragedy, explanations fail. When you stand before a tragedy and tell yourself
that there is no sense to it. Doesn't your heart break? I think that must be as hard for you as it is for me, when I scream at God and demand to know why, and he says nothing. We will both survive this, Kyla. The difference is, on the other side, I will have hope.
A naive hope.
Show me the happy man who dares not hope.
Show me the brave man who dares not face the truth.
You think I'm a coward?
I didn't mean...
I'm sorry, that wasn't fair. But come, if she's following her usual routine, Her Highness will be expecting you soon.
Kyla gulped. Drake knew?
Actually, I did kind of want to ask... How much do you know about my gifts?
Is this the place to speak about that?
It's the time. I see guilt. Not always, but sometimes. Sometimes I could even tell what a man did.
The Sakage would kill for such power.
Drake raised a hand to forestall Kyla's protest.
But given that you're not interested in blackmail, to me it sounds like a terrible burden.
What I want to know is what it means. Why would I have such a power, or gift, or curse? Why would the god do such a thing?
Ah, I see. You're hoping I can give you some kind of justification for regicide.
Kyler glared bloody daggers at the spy returning with a full platter of hors d'oeuvres. The man abruptly changed course, nearly dropping the platter.
The existence of such an ability suggests something about my purpose, doesn't it?
That depends on what you see. Do you see crime or sin, or simply feelings of guilt? If crime, do you see all the crimes, from murder to setting up a market stand without permission? If you're in another country where an action that's illegal here isn't illegal, will a man crossing the border look different? If you see sin, you'll have to figure out whose definitions of sin apply. Because I guarantee that my god and the 100 gods don't agree, or even Astara with Ishtara. If what you see is feelings of guilt, does the madman without a conscience appear cleaner than the girl who believes that her parents died in an accident because she lied about finishing her chores?
Shit. How come everyone I know is smarter than me? Whatever it is, I see the unclean. I want to know if that implies that I have a duty to do something about what I see.
She may deserve to die, Kyla, but you shouldn't kill her.
Everyone will be better off if I do.
Except you and me and my daughter and Logan and Mama Kay and everyone who loves you.
What do you mean?
Logan will put you to death, and losing you will hurt us deeply.
Sir, thank you for everything you've done for me. And everything you tried to do. I'm sorry I cost you so much.
Count Drake bowed his head and closed his eyes, leaning heavily on his cane.
Kyla, I've lost my wife and 2 daughters this year. I don't know if I can bear to lose a son.
Kyla squeezed the man's shoulder, marveling how fragile it felt. He looked into the Count's eyes.
Just so you know, you pass.
I what?
Kyla gave the man who'd once single-handedly introduced and abolished slavery in Sonaria a lopsided grin.
Whatever I see, guilt or whatever, you don't have it. You're clean.
A look of stunned disbelief shot across Drake's face, followed by something akin to awe. He stood transfixed.
May your god bless you, sir. You certainly deserve it.
Dorian and Janine were sitting together in the garden. He had dismissed his retainers, and for a time, they had sat without speaking.
I'm sorry I killed that Werdmeister.
Why? Because it upset me, or because it was wrong?
I could have dealt with him in a manner less brutal.
He was responsible for those 8thlings, wasn't he?
Yes.
Janine plucked a red flower with 6 petals, each bearing a purple starburst. Caladorans considered a blooming star flower an omen of great good luck, because they bloomed only once every 7 years. Conversely, a dead star flower was the worst luck. In this garden, they bloomed constantly, but each bloom would die within hours of being plucked. The Vir was not good at sustaining life.
My lord, I'm sure you know that my father was a fool. What most people don't know is that my mother was brilliant. My father feared her, and he tried to marginalize her so she wouldn't grow more powerful than he was. She knew it, and she let him because she didn't care to turn her mind to politics. It was too rough, too dirty, too brutal for her. My father made 1,000 mistakes in ruling, but my mother's might have been bigger because she chose not to rule. I lost the man I love, a man who would have been a great king because of that. So I'm not going to turn away because ruling is messy. My people will deserve better of me. Nor will I settle for the soft hypocrisy of criticizing you as you face threats I can barely imagine.
I don't want to rule simply because I enjoy power. If it's for that, then it's for nothing. I want to undo everything that my father and his fathers have made of this country. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if it can be done.
My lord, I see you usually being so decisive, so strong, and in the next moment you're here apologizing to me for something you had to do. Maybe you could have done it differently, but so what? There was an immediate threat, and you dealt with it. I'm trying to tell you that you don't need to be weak for me. I've seen enough weak men in my life. I guess my question is, and it's probably the same question your people have, are you going to be king, or are you trying to stay alive until you can run away?
Her words caught him. He hadn't once thought of himself growing old as God King. Had that been because he couldn't remember even a fragment of prophecy within himself as an old God King? Or because he'd been afraid to throw in his lot wholeheartedly with this land? He hadn't thought about how things would be even a year from now. In thinking for such a short term, he'd ignored problems. He hadn't done anything to seal the Highland tribes to join him. He hadn't moved against Neff. He hadn't moved against the Aethlings. If Janine saw his hesitation as weakness, how many others did too?
I am king, and I will be until the end of my life, however long that may be.
Then rule as you must to be king.
Do you have any idea what that means? Here, with these people?
No. But I trust you.
The royal guards let Kyla pass without comment. Elena Drake stood near the door, arms folded under her breasts.
I'm sorry.
How could you do this to Elaine?
He walked past her and strode through quiet corridors up the stairs to the Queen's apartments in a fog. The Kakari flicked out of his hand into the form of a dagger, then sucked back in. Was it always this simple for V? Some flirtation, a little innuendo, and your debtor isolated herself, arranged your entry, and helped keep your presence secret? After the lengths to which Kyler had gone for some kills, walking in an unlocked door seemed like cheating. The guards hadn't even taken the dagger from his belt. He'd seen so much death in this place. Tara Grayson's room was Gareth Ursul's old room. There had been statues of dead girls in the room bare weeks ago. What had they done with those statues of flesh made stony? If he ever found Trudana Jadwin, he would make Hugh Gibbet look kind. Kyla was surprised Tara was still fully clothed. She stepped close and kissed him softly, luxuriously, their only contact in their lips. She moved slowly backward, sucking on his lower lip. He followed, letting her take the lead. She closed the door and stepped into his embrace.
We'll have to be quick. I can't miss my own party, but if your tongue is half as talented as you suggest, I guarantee to reciprocate very soon.
What surprised Kyler was how easy it was. Tara was taller than Elaine, and her lips not as full, but teasing her was the same. He traced fingertips down the backs of her arms, then, feigning growing passion, slid one hand to the back of her neck and the other to the soft curve of her buttock. From the interplay of starched stiffiness and yielding flesh, he could tell she'd removed her undergarments.
Like I said, quick and clean. Later we can do long and dirty.
What was he doing? Why didn't he end this sad farce?
Finish the job, Kyla!
Kyla closed his eyes as Tara pushed him onto the bed, but as soon as he did, he imagined V standing beside the bed. She looked pissed. Kyla's eyes flew open as Tara crawled over him. She tugged her neckline down.
Kiss me.
V seemed to be standing right there, her eyes flaming, daring Kyla to do it and feel her wrath. The image made no sense, but that didn't make it any less powerful. Tara tugged her dress lower, brushing her bare breast against Kyla's face. His ear felt suddenly hot. Sickness and revulsion washed through him. His stomach cramped. Kyla fell off the bed and staggered to his feet. As his vision cleared, he saw Luke Grayson on top of his sister.
You fucking whorish cunt! How the fuck could you? You fucking slut! Tell your fucking cunt, I'll make you eat it, you dirty fucking diseased, nasty whore! You killed Natasa!
Luke drew a short dagger from his belt.
You killed our sister!
No! I swear!
Blood was pouring from a gash across her eyebrow, and her lips were fat and bloodied from Luke's fist. The last piece of darkness Kyler had seen in Tara's eyes fell into place.
She sent a messenger to the Court King, telling him Natasa was traveling to Havamir, and she arranged for there only to be two guards with her.
Tara gaped, but Luke's eyes never left her face. The guilt written there was plain.
I did it for us! She was going to betray us! For the gods' sake, help me, Kyla!
It was a mistake. She could have faced Luke down. The last thing she should have done was remind him of the other man she'd been about to fuck. He stabbed at her back as she ran to a wall, caught the ribbon of her dress, and dropped the dagger. Tara found a bell rope and yanked on it over and over. Luke picked up the bloody dagger and walked forward. He stood in front of his sister as she collapsed on the floor. Kyla wondered if Luke saw what he saw. Tara Grayson, without power, without the hauteur, was a pitiful shadow. She hunched into the corner.
Please, Luke. Please, I love you. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Perhaps Luke did see the same thing as Kyla, because he stopped, paralyzed. He still held the dagger, but Kyla knew that he wouldn't use it now. Tara's wounds weren't fatal. Kyla was certain of that, especially not with a green Maja in the castle. Tara would recover, and she would owe the Chantry an enormous debt. She would put her brother to death, and she would capitalize on people's sympathy for her to move against her enemies, real or imagined. Poor Luke Grayson, the weak bastard, wasn't even 18 yet. Kyla slapped the young man hard and plucked the dagger from his hands.
Look at me!
Luke met his eyes, and Kyla weighed the young man's soul.
Fuck! You're no killer, Luke Grayson. You marched right up here, didn't you? Walked past a dozen witnesses. I thought so.
Oh, what are you doing? Help me!
Kyla looked into Luke's eyes again and saw a young man bound in chains not of his own making. Luke was no saint, nor purely a victim, but he didn't deserve death.
Tell me one thing. If you could take the throne, would you?
Hell no!
He was telling the truth.
Then I give you these, Luke. First, knowledge. You're no killer. These wounds won't kill your sister. Second, your life. Make something of it. Third, I spare you a sight that would never leave you.
What?
Kyla rubbed Luke's bloody hands against his own. He cut Luke's tunic in two places with the dagger and finally stabbed him in the meat of his shoulder, shallowly.
What are you doing?
Kyla drew the mask of judgment over his face.
I've come for you, Tara.
He grabbed a fistful of hair and pulled her to her feet. He planted the dagger in her shoulder. With his right hand free, he pressed it against her wounded stomach to get it bloody. He wiped the blood on both sides of his face and pulled the dagger out of her shoulder. He stood behind her, using her body as a shield between him and the door. A dozen royal guards burst into the room, bristling with weaponry. Behind them, Logan Geyer and Duke Wesseros and their guards pushed into the room. In seconds, they'd formed a half-circle around Kyla and the Queen. dozens of weapons were leveled at Kyla.
Put it down! Put it down now!
Help me, please!
By the gods, Kyla, don't do this! Please!
For the job, it was perfect. Now, dozens of witnesses had seen Logan command Kyla to stop. There remained only one thing. Kyla painted a desperate expression on his face.
Luke tried to stop me and he couldn't. And you can't either.
Oh, God, no!
Kyla slashed the dagger through Tara Grayson's throat.
Mother, how are the wedding preparations coming?
Dwan Wariamo raised her eyes from the papers spread all over her desk. She loved lists.
Our protocols. I only worry about Oshobi's mother. I'd say she has the brain of a hummingbird, except hummingbirds can hover for a moment or two. I expect that Takeda's half of the ceremony to be an unmitigated disaster. I heard some lunatic arrived, claiming to be a Tofusin.
A Tofusin, she said, as if there were more than one.
Oh, he's nothing, some white-haired freak. Mother, I want your opinion. An insult's been done to our family honor that may be on some people's minds as we go into this wedding. So I think I have to deal with it now. One of the cousins cuckolded her husband. She swears it was long ago and brief, but its effects continue. What should I do?
Don Wariamo scrunched her eyebrows as if the answer was so obvious that Katie was stupid for asking.
A slut cannot be tolerated, Katie. A whore dishonors us all. Very well. I'll see it taken care of. Who is it? Mother, I'm going to ask you a question. And if you lie to me, the consequences will be harsher than you can believe. Katie, is this how you speak to your mother? None of that, Mother. What? Your tone is so disrespectful. Silence! Did you or did you not intercept letters that Solon sent to me? Of course I did. For how long? I don't remember. How long? Years. Letters came every month, sometimes more often. Every week? I suppose. What did you do with them, Mother? That Solon was worse than his brother. Don't you ever speak of that monster. Where are the letters? They were a tissue of lies. I burned them. When did he stop sending them? I don't know. 10 years ago? He didn't stop, did he? Don't you dare lie to me, by the gods. Don't you dare. It's only a few times a year now. For all I knew, it was some imposter hoping to break your heart again, Kay. Don't let this stranger ruin everything. Even if it is Solon, you don't know him. If you postpone this wedding, it could mean the end of you. Harvest is the only time for a queen to marry, and if you delay, the seas will be impassable. The lords from the other isles won't be able to attend. You need this. We can't offend the Takedas again.
Clan Takeda had been a thorn in Katie's side since she'd taken the throne. They had angled and manipulated for years for this wedding, and if, as a younger woman, she had sworn she would never marry Oshobi, now she knew there was no other way.
Mother, is there anything else you haven't told me? Anything you want to confess? Of course not. I want you to think very carefully. You're not as good a liar as you believe. There's nothing.
Katie had been wrong. Her mother was an excellent liar. Katie turned to a guard.
Summon my secretary and the chamberlain. Kay, what are you doing?
The official stepped into the room in moments. Katie had had them waiting outside.
Mother, the woman you called a slut and a whore is you. You betrayed my father and dishonored us. No, I never... Did you expect to get away with it? You fornicated with an emperor, a man surrounded by bodyguards and slaves at all hours. And you, the lady of a high house with bodyguards and slaves of your own. Did you think no one would notice?
There was real fear in Don Wariamo's face for the first time Katie had ever seen.
It didn't mean anything, Kay. Until you got pregnant and didn't know who the father was.
Don Wariamo stood transfixed, as if she couldn't believe all of her secrets had yielded their rotten fruit on the same day. Around the room, officials and guards stood with mouths agape, barely daring to breathe.
I wondered for years, Mother, why a woman so ambitious wouldn't want me to have anything to do with Prince Solon. It's because you were afraid he was my brother. You were afraid that your whoring would lead me, innocently, to an incestuous bed. Apparently, your sense of honor is only diseased rather than non-existent.
Katie, I was young. He said he loved me.
Did you believe the Green Mages when they examined me? I had no idea why at the time. I was only 9 years old, too young to be showing talent yet. They found out that I was a Wariyamo, didn't they? Weren't you relieved?
For a while. When Solon came home, a full blue mage at 19, he asked to see me discreetly. That's when I knew. He tried to be so subtle, swearing how he would never hurt you. But under it all, there were threats, Katie. What would happen when he got tired of you? What if I ever vexed him? He could destroy me with a word. I would be his slave for the rest of my life. What if you opposed him? He could lie, say the mages proved you were illegitimate. He was a mage himself. Everyone would believe it. We'd lose everything. Our only hope was to keep him away from us. It wasn't like I was hurting him. I even got him an offer for more schooling at Shokendi, which was a high honor.
Katie's face relaxed despite her fury. The decision had been made. The truth was out. Now there was room for sorrow.
So you ruined my chances of happiness because you couldn't believe that the man I loved would keep his word.
I was protecting us. No one's as good as they pretend to be.
True in your case. Secretary Tayabusa, please record that the Queen Mother is henceforth stripped of all privileges and titles. She is banished from all the isles and territories of Seth, and if found on them after tomorrow, the penalty will be death. At dawn, Chamberlain Inoue, you will have her accompanied to the harbor. You will pay her passage to whatever port she chooses. You will give her 10,000 yas and make sure that she leaves. She may be accompanied by one servant, if one can be found who volunteers to accompany her.
Everyone was stunned.
Mother, if this were the first time you'd lied to me, I wouldn't do this. It is, however, the last time. Guards, I wish two of you to stay with her at all times. I doubt she will attempt to harm herself, but she has shown herself to be an adulteress and a liar. I don't expect theft is below her.
You can't do this!
I already have.
I'm your mother!
Katie stepped forward and put her hands on each side of her mother's face. She kissed her forehead. She took hold of the 6 platinum chains strung between her mother's cheeks and ear and tore them out.
No! You are Queen Mother no more! You are Don Wariyamo no more! Henceforth, you are Don Outcast!
Guards!
The captain of the guard and his second stepped forward and took the outcast by each arm to lead her from the room.
Gay! Gay, please!
Captain, about what happened here?
The captain looked quickly at each of his men.
You can be assured of my man's complete discretion, Your Majesty.
On the contrary, no one will be punished for speaking of what happened here. My dead mother shamed my family, and I will not grant her the mercy of covering her deed's insolence. Most of all, my betrothed and his family deserve to know the truth before they wed their honor to mine.
If the Takedas went ahead with the marriage, obviously knowing the truth, they would have a harder time destroying her than if she married and they found out about her shameful secret. Other than that, there were few things the Takedas could do. A coup was doubtful, despite Oshobi's popularity among the city guard. The Takedas postponing the marriage until spring was most likely, and that would give her time. Time might give her opportunities, best for her personally and worst for Seth. The Takedas might cancel the wedding and withdraw to their home island. That would mean they would come back in the spring for war.